Happy Was the Day, a Pride and Prejudice sequel. Chapter 1. On the first October morning in 1812, after Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy came to an understanding, only her eldest sister, Jane, knew of their betrothal. This secret between sisters led directly to the two couples, Jane and her Mr. Bingley, and Elizabeth with her Mr. Darcy, to be sent without concern by their mother on an hours-long hike to spy the surrounding countryside from the highest vantage point, Oakham Mount. The previous night, when Jane struggled to comprehend how such a romance even occurred, Elizabeth resolved to delay telling their parents. She feared her earlier protestations about the man's character would color their opinions. Her sister reinforced such logic. She believed her younger sister despised Mr. Darcy. However, Elizabeth's feelings were the furthest from hate when it came to Mr. Darcy. As double chaperoning suited the aims of both Jane and Elizabeth, neither Bennet daughter apprised their parents of Elizabeth's engagement before leaving for their walk with their beaux. My mother imparted advice this morning I feel honor-bound to share. In her estimation, there is no occasion for talking to you, except just now and then, Elizabeth Bennet declared a few moments into the trek to Oakham Mount. The bright colors of autumn filled the forest canopy, rustling in the light wind high above their heads. Hearing Elizabeth's words, Mr. Darcy slowed their pace so that Mr. Bingley and Miss Bennet continued ahead of them. Elizabeth grew intrigued by his behavior, but as her sister didn't seem to mind the two couples placing a separation between them, not even a quarter mile from Longbourn, she said nothing. The chill of the morning air occupied Elizabeth's thoughts. Her fingertips struggled to stay warm inside her thin gloves. She wondered with a small tinge of regret how both she and Jane might have found happiness much earlier if she had accepted Mr. Darcy's hand in the springtime when he had first proposed in Kent instead of just the day prior. The process of courting would have been a great deal warmer. She settled her mind's concerns by recalling that all things must happen in their proper time. 6 months ago, she had possessed little knowledge to esteem the man she now accepted to become her husband. Wishing to offer sympathy for her mother's rudeness, Elizabeth smiled as she gazed up at him. To her surprise, Mr. Darcy did not appear offended in the least. Not knowing we are engaged, Elizabeth paused to state the understanding they only made the day before, as the concept felt too new, even to her. My mother did not realize the irony of her advice. I believe your mother has improved considerably in my estimation with such sage advice. Confused, Elizabeth gawked at the man, who in his terrible Kent proposal had savagely critiqued her family's manners. I do not mean to impugn your honor, but surely you jest, she replied. A branch crunched under her boot as Mr. Darcy suddenly tugged her towards a thick grouping of evergreen trees just off the path. She quickened her steps to follow him, her curiosity piqued. There wasn't a moment this man failed to thrill her. When he paused, he settled Elizabeth's gloved hand against his chest and held it gently. She could feel her own heart beating rapidly. He closed his eyes and approached her, forcing her to take a step back against a tree trunk. He raised their clasped hands and brushed the bottom of her chin to encourage her to tilt her gaze up at him. Then he bent down and pressed his lips against hers. A kiss, stolen in the bereft woodland, rendered delicious shivers from head to toe in both the lady and the gentleman. Mr. Darcy kissed her more urgently, allowing his tongue to gently tempt her to part her lips. And when she did, they experienced the first intimate tangle of their persons. Heat began to spread through Elizabeth's body as she clasped Mr. Darcy's hands even tighter, gasping against the urgent press of his body against hers. Breaking away reluctantly, Mr. Darcy leaned his head above hers as their difference in heights allowed, keeping her embraced between himself and the protection of the trees. Forgive me, he uttered, breathlessly. I have wished to kiss you for months. Startled by the intensity of desire she felt for a man, just 2 days before she would have claimed a mere acquaintance, Elizabeth breathed deeply to calm her nerves. Her senses acknowledged a new fragrance, a mixture of the crisp, cool air and Mr. Darcy's scent with hints of sandalwood. She recognized the manly musk from colognes her uncle and father used. The safety of Mr. Darcy's arms spurred a new sensation entirely, one of comfort and security, a feeling she had not known since she was a much younger girl, often raised to her father's shoulders so she could see far ahead when they visited the village of Meryton.
Reluctantly, Mr. Darcy stepped back, and Elizabeth immediately tugged on the lapels of his coat, an encouragement he scarcely needed to swoop in and kiss his future bride once more.
This time it was Elizabeth's tongue that conducted the offense, and he found a lady's genuine attraction to his person almost more than he could bear.
His mind raced at the thought of mere kisses igniting his baser instincts, that as a gentleman he took great pride in keeping under good regulation. After a flurry of additional kisses, Mr. Darcy did indeed step away, leaving Elizabeth fully bereft of the loss of warmth their bodies and proximity had offered. He paced, while Elizabeth leaned her head against the tree. "We must tell your father, at once," Mr. Darcy said, suddenly flexing his hands, as though to test their grip. "We shall." "And my mother," Elizabeth said, and Mr. Darcy froze in his tracks. He looked to her with a brow raised in question. She clarified, "I shall tell my mother." He responded with a single nod in agreement. Clearing his throat, Mr. Darcy slowly approached Elizabeth again and held out his hand. She pushed off of the tree trunk and accepted his assistance, minding the roots beneath her feet that made the ground uneven. He turned her gently to inspect the back of her cloak, then casually brushed the debris away. As his hand naturally smoothed over her backside, Elizabeth held her breath, and he again cleared his throat. "It would appear we are very compatible, in a realm most marriages lack." Elizabeth knew she ought to pretend to be ignorant of relations that happened between a man and a woman. But she had always been a terrible liar, and Mr. Darcy would not cherish deceit, even when done so in a coquettish manner. "My sister and I vowed to marry for love, which I believe is often a natural precursor for a marriage you describe." Her answer stunned him for a moment, and he grinned, then shook his head. "I should have learned long ago that any discussion I am fortunate enough to engage in with you never fails to disappoint me in joy." "So happy to oblige," she rejoined. "I am an obligation to you, then?" "Nay," Elizabeth challenged, skipping ahead of him back towards the path. Mr. Bingley and Jane were likely half a mile or more away, and Elizabeth feared falling too far behind them to cause worry. Though part of her did wonder if Mr. Bingley had been of the same mind as his friend, and Jane's cloak would need tending by her paramour as well. "You are a companion, my companion," she specified, and began to blush. The business of being a woman declared for by a man affected her emotional state, and she did not see her future husband's blush that matched her own. With his legs being considerably longer than hers, Mr. Darcy caught up to Elizabeth in no time at all. He gallantly offered his arm, and she accepted out of affection instead of necessity. They strolled, and Elizabeth finally felt brave enough to speak about a dilemma that had distracted her mind since the previous evening. "After we marry, must we leave Hertfordshire at once?" she asked. Mr. Darcy's throat suddenly went dry as insecurities raced through his mind. His voice sounded thin. "You do not wish to leave?"
I do, she said, reassuring him. "I only worry about my father."
You see, she took a deep breath and explained to him that when they were first acquainted, she had not kept Mr. Darcy's slight at the assembly private.
"You have my sincerest apologies that my tongue wagged as it did, but at the time I felt insulted, and I've always battled such melancholy with laughter."
"At my expense."
"You had made your statement at my expense, for your comfort," she reminded him, and he grimaced. "I believe that neither of us performed at our best in the past. There are actions neither of us can change by discussing them now," he offered, and Elizabeth heartily nodded in agreement. "But may I ask, why are you so concerned about this? Has your father expressed concern over you getting married?" The pit of her stomach clenched with dread. How was she to explain that just a few days ago, after Mr. Darcy's aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, visited, her father had made fun of the very notion of her marrying Mr. Darcy? That a cautionary but entirely misguided letter from her cousin, Mr. Collins, arrived stating that such a marriage was beyond her family's social reach. "Do you recall my cousin, Mr. Collins?" She winced as Mr. Darcy began to cough, covering up epithets that were most unbecoming, yet truthful, about her bombastic cousin that served as parson to his aunt. "Did you know he asked for my hand?" Darcy stopped. Elizabeth stumbled a moment, then caught her balance. Poor Mr. Darcy's face paled with embarrassment. "His application was before mine." Elizabeth nodded. "And you must have rejected him." "Immediately, without a moment's consideration," Elizabeth quickly answered. Darcy slowly nodded. "And your father is aware you spurned the offer that,
He paused and thought for a moment, remembering that Mr. Collins was to inherit Longbourn. Marrying Mr. Collins would have saved your entire family in the event of your father's untimely passing. Elizabeth looked down, slightly ashamed by the reminder her family's status rested wholly on the health of her father. After she counted the moments of silence for a few seconds, she took a deep breath and prepared to expose herself to absolute ridicule. Yes, I was selfish, rude, and a disloyal daughter if you ask my mother. However, in refusing him, I was able to visit Kent as his cousin, not his wife, she emphasized, and be presently available to become your wife once we set a date. Hopefully you shall not think less of me for lacking mercenary aims. On the contrary, I think better of you, my dear. I only regret the revelation that my proposal, my first proposal, he corrected himself and laughed nervously, must have been on par with that buffoon's, for you rejected me in a similarly efficient manner. That's not entirely, Elizabeth began, but stopped when Mr. Darcy began to laugh. She laughed too, squeezing his upper arm in affection. She couldn't truthfully state the rejection of both men had been so very different, but that the men were very different in her esteem, that she could defend. Perhaps I am a creature of habit when I am proposed marriage without any expectation of the request, and to men I do not presently esteem. But where Mr. Collins could do nothing to improve his behavior in my estimation, part of my dislike for your behavior was based on misguided assumptions. Mr. Darcy laughed. And equally based on the poor behavior I engaged in. You need not flatter my vanity, madam. His voice dropped into a low growl. I have won my prize. He turned and stepped to block her path, gazing intently into her eyes in a way she had seen before, but misjudged in the past to be him finding fault. Now she recognized the fiery passion behind his expression, one of intense focus upon the object of his love. She smiled, then sighed. And I have been happily won, but even Jane could not accept my news last evening without many questions. She closed her eyes, feeling the quick nip of a kiss upon the tip of her nose. She opened her eyes in shock. I believe my family accepted me as the daughter who shall never wed, so they may not readily believe I am marrying for the right reasons. He closed his eyes and considered their predicament for a moment. Do you suspect your father will insist on a longer engagement? He opened his eyes and resumed his position next to her that they might continue their progress towards Oakham Mount. Elizabeth's voice cracked as such a possibility had never occurred to her. Perhaps, I cannot say. Suddenly, she held no desire to be parted from Mr. Darcy, now that she knew how much she cared for the man. The strength of her emotions shoved aside all reason and sensibility of a long engagement. They walked in silence another quarter of a mile, neither feeling a need to fill the air with shallow conversation, both merely thought of solutions, and while Elizabeth's mind took a flight of fancy considering she was of age and no longer needed her father's approval, Mr. Darcy's thoughts sought to satisfy Mr. Bennet's concerns. He wished to earn the blessing of Elizabeth's father, if for no other reason than that his intended loved her father very much. Being without living parents himself, he revered her good fortune to possess two. The road rose in a steep grade as they neared the summit, and there was the first sign of Jane and Mr. Bingley ahead. Mr. Darcy received inspiration. What if I speak to Charles and ask for us to remain at Netherfield for some time after our nuptials? He asked. Elizabeth latched onto her betrothed's idea, adding logical reasoning. Yes, perhaps instead of a wedding trip we remain together for a month or so. Then to Pemberley for Christmas, she asked, offering him a clear sign she did not wish to remain in Hertfordshire indefinitely, just time enough for her father to grow accustomed to her marriage. Will your family wish to travel with us? Mr. Darcy asked, praying. The Bennets held a long tradition of staying at Longbourn for Christmas time.
Oh, I shouldn't like to invite them, Elizabeth said hastily, thinking of Lydia and Mr. Wickham trying to seek an invitation and dealing with her mother advocating for family harmony. Then she felt a small amount of sadness at the thought of a Christmas without family, envisioning Pemberley, as large as the estate home was, to be quite lonely.
What of my aunt and Uncle Gardiner? We owe them a great deal that we came to an understanding. Two of the most sensible people I have ever met, Mr. Darcy stated, giving high praise. Elizabeth breathed easily as Jane and Mr. Bingley turned around and waved at them. I believe, madam, we have settled many things.
Yes, Elizabeth said with a laugh, as they hurried their pace to reach the peak.
but I believe there will be much more to negotiate." And she wrinkled her nose, unhooked her arm from his, and began to run the rest of the way.
Mr. Darcy watched in appreciation before lifting his hat and joining Elizabeth in her folly.
His Elizabeth.